If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool, so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Stacy Morgan, a family child care provider at Little Bit of Sunshine Nature Learning Academy, has transitioned from a successful banking career to early childhood education, where she feels she's truly found her calling. Her approach is rooted in building strong relationships and fostering a child-led learning environment, earning her praise for her patience and resourcefulness. Stacy's program emphasizing learning through play and nature, inspiring curiosity and resilience in children. Her dedication and holistic approach makes her an invaluable asset to the Delaware early childhood community. Recognized with the 2025 Excellence in Early Childhood Award, Stacy says, "My work is not a job, it's a lifestyle." Without further ado, Stacy Morgan. Hello, everybody. Hello, Stacy Morgan. How are you? Welcome to the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast.
Hello, Victoria. Thank you. I'm happy to be with you.
Great. I'm so excited. So I want to backpedal a little bit and have you introduce yourselves and just share a little bit about how you went from, I believe you had a career in banking.
I did.
And you moved into early childhood education, such a drastic change. So can you tell us a little bit about that story?
Well, back in, I guess, after I graduated, I started at a bank here in Delaware. At the time, it was called MBNA, and it is now Bank of America. And I was just doing billing transcripts. I was just plugging in information in the computer, which is not very fulfilling, but it was a job that paid the bills. And about 3 years into it, had my first child, my oldest, who is 31 now. And I did not like being away from him. I always loved working with children when I was younger. I always said that I wanted a big family. And it just made sense for me to move from banking into childcare, early childhood education, so that I could be home with my own son, but also provide, you know, my hope was good quality childcare for others. So that's when I started. And that was back in 1995.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
Amazing how to, and I hear a lot of that us women, we want to be with our children, and that's the beginning of these beautiful programs. So your program is home-based, and
yes.
I would love to learn about how you incorporated the nature-based philosophy piece, and if that was something you initially did when you first started out, or was that something that you grew into? I would love to learn more about that.
So I always favored having the children outside versus in my indoor classroom. It was not until I went through an initiative through the University of Delaware, which is DIEEC or Delaware Stars, had a Let's Go Outside initiative. And I signed up for that. I was chosen for it because not everyone was able to do it. And once going through that and seeing other providers in Delaware that were doing more nature-based programs. Some of them were outside all day. Some of them were just part of the day. I decided that was just a passion of mine. I started doing it more with the children that I had in my care and started noticing the difference in just their demeanor with each other, with me, the way they handled themselves, their behavior. how they embraced their learning more. It just was, we were happier outside. So I just decided that I was going to move forward and learn what it meant to be nature-based so that when I said I was a nature-based school, that I was really truly nature-based. And I had done my research and saw that as long as I did 30% of my day outside, that I could be considered nature-based. So that's only 3 hours of my full day. We do much, much more than that. I mean, we do probably three and a half hours in the morning, and then we come back inside for nap time, and then we go back outside.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's much easier, isn't it? It's like so.
It's more joyful.
Yeah. And I guess that's even my next question, which you just answered, but just in terms of that transition, seeing the benefits of the children's behavior and how they are engaging just in their playful learning and how that's different from being indoors versus outdoors. So it's incredible to hear.
Yes.
That affirmation. So in terms of your daily themes and structures, I think you were talking a little bit about maybe a Math Monday or a Fun Friday. Can you tell us a little bit about how you incorporate nature into these sort of a balanced learning environment? Because some people think, oh, well, if you're outside, you're just at recess and playing all day.
So I decided when I was going to be nature-based that I wanted to find not necessarily a curriculum, but a nature guide to show me how I can incorporate how we're learning outdoors when I'm outside with the children. And I stumbled upon a program that was through CUGA in the early years. And she had a nature-based study guide that followed the seasons. So it made sense for me because I'm a person that needs to follow the steps, things in chronological order. So we just find things that are happening in our area during these different seasons. You know, we might study the leaves. We might do observations on, like, 1 year when I started this, it was a very wet autumn. So we had lots of mushrooms to find on our property because we have 2 acres. So yeah. we would go on hunts and we would leave them. We would leave the mushrooms alone. You know, they were taught to respect nature, not to destroy them, not to step on them, so that we could come back and see if they grew larger, you know, if they went away. It was just something that caught the children's attention. And they still, to this day, the children that were with me 2 years ago when I started this, if they spot a mushroom out in the classroom, it's a really big deal. I have to stop what I'm doing. I have to bring my phone. I have to take a picture of it. Now that we have Google Lens, we don't ever not go away with what the name of the mushroom is.
Isn't that amazing? It's in a beautiful way, I think, to incorporate that technology into nature-based education. There's just, we have knowledge at our fingertips. And I think, yes, computer and screens can be like the enemy, but I think it also can be such an incredible asset.
I do. I agree. I believe that there is a place for technology. For me, it's a way for me to tell the children if they ask what something is, I can say, I'm not sure. Give me a little bit of time and I'll look it up. And then we go back, we do our research. I show them some pictures. So it is definitely a tool that I love to have.
Yeah.
I love to use my technology for my observations and of course to post them on my social media, which is really for the parents to see what the children are learning and how they're learning and how being outside is so beneficial.
Yeah. Beautiful. So what strategy? So again, you're a home care provider. Do you call yourselves a home care provider? How do you define it?
We family child care provider, but we are now family child care early childhood educators. Yeah. They're trying to change the names for us so we have more respect.
Absolutely.
we're not just babysitters.
No, and the way I see it, it's just that your program just happens to be in a space that you have, which is your home. So it's
right.
It's the same thing. It just happens to be
the more intimate setting.
Yeah,
it is. I believe that you can. We create that closeness and a more of a bond and the connection, which I believe is so important when you connect with the children. It just opens the doors up for that comfort and learning.
So with that, what strategies do you use to enable the children just the freedom to explore their interests while engaging in nature. You kind of talked about your property, it being very large and that you can go on these beautiful nature walks. Are there any other examples that you can
give? I feel like simple steps, just setting, being intentional with the way I set up my outdoor classroom. The children I have right now favor our mud kitchen, which is not necessarily mud. I know that scares people to hear that. It's not always, I don't always put mud in there. We have dry ingredients that we use. I add nature recipes that can be printed out where they can actually go find the dandelions. We might have dandelion Play-Doh. We might have a time when it's dandelions are out. We really focus on that. We have an area that's set up where there's different types of nature, like pine cones and sticks and things where they can do construction. We have dump trucks where they can fill the dump trucks. They can dig and they can dig in the mulch and fill the dump trucks up and stick around. I have a grapevine that was given to me, a structure that a grapevine would not grow on by my neighbor. And I decided to make it have something that it could grow on. So we've been watching the grapes grow. We have a flower garden where we planted the flowers. So they got to watch, you know, they got to plant the seeds and then they got to wait patiently for the flowers to grow. And now we have sunflowers that are taller than us. As they were growing, we used rulers, we used a yardstick to measure. So you were asking how I incorporated the Math Monday, Math Science Monday. That is really for me just to have a guide to make sure that I am doing things with them. But I do believe that things are happening organically and naturally when you're out in nature. And I really think that if you're intentional with the way you set up your environment, that the children are going to learn.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
I don't believe that you have to have a curriculum, because I believe the children are the curriculum. And if you slow down and observe them, you will see what their interests are. And then I take that and bring it into the classroom.
Yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful. So can you share any other specific examples on maybe a specific child kind of reached a milestone that maybe a child was, I know I have a lot of children that come to my program, which is called the Secret Gardens Outdoor Classroom, and they might be initially very fearful of bugs. But once they meet another child who loves bugs, they walk away loving bugs. So any examples of maybe a child that's either had a drastic change or a milestone that they've hit because nature was the tool for teaching?
So like they were apprehensive about being in nature?
Yeah.
And now they're not?
It could be something like that, or just a milestone, anything.
Oh, goodness. I right now you're catching me off guard, because I can't really think of, I mean, we have challenges. The one specifically that I'm thinking of, this child, it wasn't necessarily being in nature around bugs or other things that we have in nature. It was having the mosquito guy come.
Oh, interesting.
And she was terrified because when he would pull up, she would just start screaming.
Oh, interesting.
And just begging me to please go back inside. So we did have that brief time where I had to make sure that I communicated with this company to let me know when they were coming so that we could be inside before they showed up. But she's past that now. So I think it's just...
Well, it's such an interesting thing to think about, because there's also kids that I think about that sort of have sensory issues. They don't want to get, or they go into the mud kitchen, they don't want to get muddy, or they don't want to go barefoot on the grass, because, and I'm sure we, you know, at this point, we don't necessarily have those.
No.
But when you think initially, there might be some kids, but, and what we do. So it's fascinating that's
right.
Not happening in your
program.
I mean,
I do believe that you need to have another option if children have sensory issues. Like if they don't want to touch the mud, then maybe just have, you know, a water table set up for them. I don't believe in forcing them to do the activity that I have set up, or the invitation to play, which is I'm inviting you to come and do this.
Right.
This is not something you have to do.
Yeah.
That child may not want to do the sensory play, I do notice this same child's sibling. We may be in a group where all of us are together. There's five, myself and five other students. And this sibling is off collecting sticks because he loves numbers and counting. Oh. And anything that I do on Math Monday, like he just loves it and can't get enough of numbers. So he'll do things, the counting. So I incorporated the Math Monday for him to make sure that I had things set up. So
yeah,
I really focus on each individual child and what, you know, what they really love and make sure that at least that I have something for them, mm-hmm. you know, intentionally set up every yeah. week so that they have that opportunity. And I don't set it up on Monday and then take it away. You know, if I'm doing a nature study and I set something out, it stays out if they're interested in it. And when they don't really show an interest in it anymore, then that's when I'll change it over. But yeah. I think that you need to leave it there for them to continue to explore and, yeah. you know, have it each day instead of it's here today and then it's gone tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a little bit like a museum, you know, and it's really observing the children. And I love how you make that point into those that are listening to really leave your invitations for learning or your provocations or whatever you want to call them out and to observe the children. And when they seem sort of done with that type of learning, and that's when we as museum people, we get to change it up. And
we get to change it up, or we can add to it.
Yeah.
Like you can just set out, you know, one thing and then add to it and continue.
I love that.
I mean, I had this past Monday, I don't really have anything that I'm following for the summer because it's kind of just a laid back. Yeah. It's summertime. I have older children here with the younger children. But on Monday, I had a little scale, you know, with the buckets on the sides. And yeah. I just went around the yard and picked up pine cones and mulch and dried up pieces of stump that had fallen off and things that were super light, things that were heavier, just to see. And I don't say, oh, I have this set up. I leave it there and I wait to see whose attention it's going to catch.
Yeah.
And then I just watch them. And that is my most favorite part of my job, is to watch the magic happen.
Yeah, I do too. So in terms of like activities like drawing shapes in dirt or climbing, how does that contribute to kind of the essential skills in their hand dexterity and strength? How might you incorporate that?
I make sure that they have opportunities to climb, swing. I know that we have the climbing dome. So that one I love because there's the scaffolding, you know, yeah. so the younger ones can hang from the first bar. I do have a rule that they're not allowed to, like the parents, myself, no one is allowed to help them up. They have to be physically ready to do it themselves, because if they need help up, then they're not going to be able to safely get down. So I do have that rule, and it is really fun to snap those pictures of them when they're first starting. And then a couple years later, they might be halfway. And then when they get to the top and they've successfully done it on their own, it is a huge celebration here. Like yeah. I did it, you know, I got to the top. The climbing, like all of those things are so beneficial for early writing, the fine motor skills. I put a lot of things in the mud kitchen or outdoor housekeeping, whatever you want to call it. We made homemade lemonade the other day, but then I took the lemons that we had already juiced over to the mud kitchen. And I had the little juicers that you have to squeeze really hard.
Yeah.
So they were squeezing the leftover lemons to get more juice out of them. So I do it. I always tell everybody, I slide it in there and the kids don't even realize what they're doing.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's not necessarily this formal sit down, you know, show you how to hold the scissors. There's nothing formal about my program.
Yeah.
I love that. I'd like to say that I want to bring back that old-fashioned childhood where the kids are, we were learning when we didn't even realize we were learning. And now there's studies from the University of Chicago, NACI, you know, they're just showing the benefits of learning outdoors.
Yeah.
And being outdoors more.
Absolutely.
And there's benefits of being inside. I love my indoor classroom. I just love being outside more than I like being inside. The benefits of being outside outweighs being indoors.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And I love your story about not allowing any adult to help the child go to the next level on the climbing structure. Mm-hmm. Because it's a testament to, I think we have a lot of adults, just us adults, we immediately want to help. And yes. I think that sends the wrong message. We're not allowing, that's a whole conversation on risk play, and we're not allowing our children to take risks because we're right literally behind them because we're right. afraid they're going to fall. So I right. love the fact that you have that rule. And I think it's you articulate it beautifully, and it's very simple for everybody to understand. And there's so many messages within that one little rule to both the kids and the families and your community and all of that. So I kudos to you for that.
Thank you. I know I've done a lot of research on the risky play, and I do have several ladies on Instagram that I follow that have really promoted the risky play. Yeah. And I've come a long way because I was the provider that was scared to let them do anything, afraid that they would fall down and bump their heads or skin their knees. And I believe that when you allow the risky play with boundaries, that you will see that the children get hurt less.
Yeah.
And we are not allowed to say, be careful. I have educated my parents to please, when they come to the program to pick their children up, to stop. And I call it the 17-second rule. If you see your child doing something and you have that like pit in your stomach and you want to say, be careful, count to 17. By the time you're done, you're going to see that your child had the ability to do it.
Yeah.
And it's okay. And if they fall, they're going to be okay. They're going to get up. Yeah. They're going to brush themselves off. They may get hurt. They may get cry, but they're going to build that resilience and they're going to want to try again.
And you alluded to this earlier in terms of being a family child care provider, that there's a more intimate setting, and that just in this piece of your conversation, saying, you know, educating your parents in terms of even the language. And they might be first time parents. They might, who knows where they are in their stage of parenting, but to send these messages, this is the culture that we're creating here. This is the community that we're creating here.
Right.
And this is the language we use.
Right.
Is so incredibly powerful, because that's like the domino effect that
yes.
carries.
Well,
on. I love
if
that.
If you are a caregiver or an early childhood educator in a center-based, you're not going to have the opportunity to really connect with those parents on this intimate level the way that we do as family child care providers. And I do believe that when you say to a parent, trust me, you need to show them why. Mm-hmm. Give them the reason why they should trust you. And that's what I was never really a social media person. Started out with Facebook because I wanted to connect with my family. And then I realized the benefits of sharing. Why do we do this?
Yeah.
Why do I do this with the children? Why am I getting them outside? Why am I working on this skill and that skill? Why am I making sure that I slow down for these children? Why am I not doing worksheets? You know, and I put it in my posts. I will write on there, you know, why is this developmentally correct for birth to five? Why am I doing this with this infant? Why did I get rid of all of my seats and my swings and my extra saucers? I have none of it in my program. And other friends that have, you know, family child care, they're like, how do you do it with an infant? What do you put them in? And I'm like, right. I don't put them in anything. You know, they lay on the floor, or they're in my arms, or they're in a high chair to eat food. Yeah. And, you know, they're in a safe environment and they're exposed to nature in the same way that the other children are. I just make sure that I risk assess. I make sure that they're not going to be climbing on the climber. They're not going to be in the mulch. It's just important. You just think about, what is your why? Why aren't you doing something? Is it because you don't want the mess? You don't want to have to deal with it. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to put that effort in there. So when it's beneficial for the child, you're doing it because it benefits the child. I promise you, you're going to love your job better.
Yeah.
It's because you're going to see how they flourish and the joy that they have when they're with you.
It's magic.
It is. It really is.
Yeah. And you just answered a lot of questions under my next heading, which was just challenges that we experience or you experience and the adaptability. And I think, you know, mixing that risk play in there, communicating with parents, what might be some of the challenges, like weather challenges in terms of getting your kiddos outdoors, and you've got all different ages and stages. What would be some other challenges? The first thing that comes to mind, which is always the big challenge in terms of is weather. But any others that just challenges and maybe how you adapt?
Clothing, making sure that you have everything that you need for every age. We have muddy buddies for rainy weather. Everyone is required when they register with me that during the winter months, they have to have a snowsuit and snow boots that stay here. I have collected and asked any of the parents as they grow out of their snowsuits if I can keep them because it's inevitable that someone doesn't have it. And we have our rare here in Delaware snow day. And I don't want to miss the opportunity to get them out in the snow. We do it, the challenge, getting them all ready. Yeah. What, family childcare, you're one person. So my rule is when we go outside, we are going to be outside as long as it took me to get you ready to go outside. So I feel that it was worth it.
I love your little rules.
Yes.
little things that, you know, nuggets that sort of get you to climbing over the next mountain.
The nuggets that make Miss Stacy.
I absolutely love that. So it just sounds like a wonderful program. I grew up in Bethesda, Maryland, so we did not get a lot of snow. And when it did snow, everything just shut down because no one knew how to do anything in the snow. So, but I'm currently in Massachusetts and it snows all the time.
I was going to say, I don't know that we really shut down. The schools still run and operate now because we just do the Zoom schools.
Yeah.
Where they do right.
Well, they've gotten a bit better over the years.
But ever since COVID.
back in the day.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we talked a lot about family and community engagement. It sounds like you have truly just made this exchange and back and forth and involving families and creating this incredible community, not only through social media, but through your newsletters and really educating parents on just this beautiful community that you've created, not only with just your actions and modeling it, but also communicating the language and the culture. I love everything about it. So is there anything else you want to add about the importance of community engagement?
I do think that community engagement, it's important on our level to make sure that we are engaging with the families outside of regular business hours. Mm-hmm. If you had asked me about that years ago, I would have said, I do enough and my evenings and my weekends are mine. What I have found is that I enjoy spending time with the families outside of regular business hours because I feel like they've become second families. Like it's not just a business. It's a lifestyle. We're family childcare providers. I'm an early childhood educator, but I do believe that my job is who I am.
Oh my God.
I don't know how else to.
Your tagline under your, it's a family childcare. It's a lifestyle.
If you talk to any of my current and past families, you will know that when I say that I love your children, I genuinely love their children. Even if their child is sassy and, you know, may have their little challenges or really make me work hard, I love them. And it's, I think that I have a heart for the children that have behaviors that may be a little more challenging for someone else. I do have a lot of children in my program that have been diagnosed with ADHD because my oldest was. I just think that I have a heart for those children to the point where I just listened to, because I don't have time to read. So I listen to audiobooks, but ADHD is awesome. And it was amazing. And I do believe that ADHD is a superpower. You just have to work on the things that, you know, you need to manage that don't crash into your life and really focus on the positives for those children that have it. Because there's not one that hasn't come through my program that doesn't have the ability, like they're very artistic or they're very talented when it comes to music. It's all just connecting with the families. And on that level is very important to me.
Beautiful.
And I don't want them to leave my program without us continuing to keep in contact.
Yeah.
Because it's sad.
I love that. And it's, yeah, so they become sort of family members.
Yes.
And also thinking about the neurodiversity of children and that more families with neurodiverse children are finding their ways to nature-based programs. That's what that's what I'm hearing, at least around here.
Well, they need more movement.
They need more movement.
They need more movement. Yeah. And traditional school is not the best place for them.
Yeah.
And I found this out with my oldest because I pulled him while I was running family child care and homeschooled him at the same time.
Yeah.
And, you know, because he needed to be schooled differently. And I think that needs to be okay. And I think that it needs to be looked at, like, not that it's odd, but it's just what that child needs. And when we reach each child and their individual needs, it's okay. Because we're all different. We all have different brains.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So what are your future plans for your program for enhancing nature-based education?
My hands are always in a whole bunch. So
I'm so surprised.
I kind of put it on pause because I was working on some other things, but I am currently working on getting accreditation in, it's called the Curiosity Approach. So I have a year into that, and I think I have 2 more years to do it. It is a lot of work, a lot of documentation. So I've paused on that because I really am interested in having my program certified as a nature school. So that's what I'm working on now, because when I do that, it will show the research that's been done of what you need to have in your outdoor space.
Yeah.
That shows that children are learning and they're getting what they need developmentally as they play. So that's right now, that's my goal, to finish those two things and work on a session that I have been approved to do in the First State Child Care Conference in October. So I will be teaching a session, which honestly, if you had told me this a year ago, I would have said no.
Now, which conference is it?
This is the First State Child Care Conference in Delaware.
Yeah.
It's the fourth annual. So this is the fourth year that they've had it.
Oh, neat.
So I will be doing a session and I will have a short speech before the keynote speaker.
Wow. Fun.
Yes.
You're on your way, my friend.
Yes.
Well, I could talk to you all day long. I love all the nuggets that you have shared with us today. Are there any final thoughts that you would like to share with our community?
Just let the children play. Let them play. Less structure, more unstructured, and just be intentional with what you have set up so that you feel confident that they're learning as they're playing.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Stacy.
It was great speaking with you.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode. Before we sign off, we have an exciting opportunity for educators looking to bring learning to life outdoors. Consider enhancing your teaching journey with the Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. This program empowers educators to transform any outdoor space into a dynamic learning environment. By joining, you'll gain skills to inspire students and foster a deeper connection with the natural world. Interested in making a difference with outdoor learning? Visit www.outdoor-classrooms.com to learn more about enrolling in the certification program. Don't miss the chance to expand your teaching toolkit and inspire the next generation with the joy of outdoor education. Thank you for listening, and remember to subscribe to our podcast for more inspiring content. Until next time, keep inspiring young minds.